going.
That just means he's got it naturally.
He's going somewhere to finish his last 2 years. And has $96,000 in money. That is wonderful.
It is wonderful.
You miss him.
He's out there. Oh. Call the meeting order.
And
Mr. Molliver, are you ready to go?
Vanguard had 21 valedictorians again.
Well, it's their IP students.
But still, 21.
I'll give you the gavel back. You can pronounce every one of their names. Okay, let's call the audit committee meeting to in order. And I guess in attendance, Mr. Brower, our city manager, Councilman Hilty, Councilman Molliver, Councilman Musley, Councilwoman Mary Sue Rich, and myself, John McLeod. Mr. Brower, I don't need to turn it over to you, do I? Topics for discussion. Approve the March 25th, 2014 audit committee minutes. I guess we're going to need a motion for that. Have a motion? Do we have
second.
A second? Motion and a second. Do you have any public comments on the minutes? No public comment. Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye. B, GSB 67 and 68.
GASB. Generally accepted. Help me.
Accounting Standards Board.
Generally accepted standards.
Governmental Accounting Standards Board.
Yes, this is going to be our Chief Financial Officer, Diane Reichert, is going to provide you a brief update on GASB 67 and 68. These deal with the reporting of our unfunded pension liabilities on our net assets or our balance sheet. She's going to give you some more details.
And these two standards, one standard is going to go into effect with this audit year ending September 30th, and that's GASB 67. It replaces GASB 25, and then the GASB 68 goes into effect next year in September 2015, and it's going to require us to retroactively report those net assets, net liabilities at this point on the books. And we just wanted to give you a heads up at this point. The amount is $142 million. And so we just wanted you to know, I mean, it might change this year when we get our report, but at this point, that's where we're at. The items that will change this year is related to the actuarial report. The value of the assets are going to be reported a little differently. Some expenses are going to be expensed immediately, and some are going to expense gradually over time. There is going to be two different reports coming out of the actuary, so the costs for actuaries and the costs for accounting audit services are going to go up. And then the credit rate agencies are looking at this, and they're going to look at the unfunded liabilities ratio. They're going to look at the funding level ratio. As you know, our unfunded liability ratio is 68%, 73%, and 48% in our general fund. So we're shooting to get them improved. And the funding levels are good for the city because we have continued to fund the annual required contributions. So I just wanted to let you know about that it's coming down the pike so that we could prepare for it for the following fiscal year.
So bottom line is Mark White, when he does the external audit for the current fiscal year, will have to report, if the numbers don't change, a $142 million negative position from pensions. And so that will have to go on the net assets or balance sheet, and it will have an impact on your financial statements for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2014.
GASB, if that's the right.
GASB.
Yes.
GASB is how we say it. Yes, sir.
Acronym 101.
All right.
C, interim audit comments and responses.
As part of our audit this year, we always have an interim audit and it was handled this year, the first week in May. And due to President McLeod speaking with the auditors, that when they came in to do their interim audit, we looked at some internal controls over purchasing and contract management. So as the exit interview with the external auditors, they provided the four-page report that you see. Typically, we don't do this at interim. We typically just wait for the audit comments at year end. Well, they had done this extensive review for Council President McLeod, and so we wanted to show you what we had learned and where we were going with the information. So Tiffany and I both met with them on Friday as they were leaving, and we went over all of these items. And then they put it in writing so that you all could see what kind of things that we had been doing during our audit, interim audit process. And I just wanted to go over my two-page memo, if you don't mind. It talks about some of the things that we have been doing. Do you sure. see him? You may put it up on the screen?
Yeah,
do we have a handout?
No. You put it up on the screen if you could.
I can. Just take me a minute.
We're
to
very picture-oriented up here.
That's fine. So if we start with the organizational structure recommendations, we do have a centralized purchasing model. As you know, we've brought everything back under the purchasing department. If you want to read the last sentence, the procurement department has initiated a reorganization that will address efforts to improve business processes by adding two additional professionals on staff. We'll talk about that a little bit later tonight. In the purchasing policies and contract policies, we do have a draft procurement policy that we've been on the works for the past 3 or 4 months, and we are going to include in that procurement policy benchmarking, standardization, stacking, protest, and quotes. A report to the council is being done, as you saw it in tonight's agenda. For every contract that's less than 100,000, we're now putting them on the council agenda as informational items. The city is will develop a contract policy. We don't even have that started yet, but we will, based on their suggestions and recommendations, including approval process and the contract templates for the bid packages, closer management of revenue contracts as well. Many times we always think of contracts as simply the contracts for expenses, but we have a lot of contracts out there for us receiving revenues as well. And then we are going to do training, more training, and you'll hear about that as well in a little bit later in the presentation tonight. The warehouse and purchasing, we have changed this recommendation already, and the warehouse purchase orders are flowing through our procurement division before they're approved. They're not simply approved by the warehouse department only. We're handling that through the procurement office. Utility material standardization. We are going to encourage vendor participation and try to talk about standardization in the policy. All of this has not even been totally, completely vetted through our departments, but we will have a good policy, hopefully at the next council meeting, depending on how our discussion goes tonight. And the e-procurement recommendation that they made, this is going to be huge for our vendor participation in our procurements. It's going to improve controls, provide for contract, commodity bidding, and vendor management. We've already been looking at this for over a year, so we've just finally gotten approval to move forward with it, so we are going to have that out to the vendors by September. And the last thing is the application controls. We're going to review all the application access and approval queues. They found some inconsistencies in our approval queue process, so we want to improve that internal control process as well. So this is our discussion at midterm. And so we're working on that so that before they come back in November, December to audit us, we will have all these things under control. Okay. Do you have any questions of Mark or myself? Mark White is in the audience with us from Purvis Gray and his partner, Phil, who does work on our audit.
Any questions, Council? Can you pull back up the sheet?
Okay. Oops. D, item D?
D, right?
Yes, sir.
Procurement best practices, approved budget adjustments of $142,121.
Okay, so first of all, before we go into that, I'm going to ask Tiffany Kimball, Procurement Director, to come forward, and she's going to talk to us about all of the things that she's been doing so far on the Procurement Department.
Good evening. Tiffany Kimball, Director of Contracts and Procurement. I've been here almost 3 years now, and I was basically brought in to bring contracts and bring some type of contractual management to the city. My initial assessment when I got here was that the city really had no contractual management. And for a city this large and with all our enterprises, that just really is not a good business practice. So we had a module in our Eden Financial System called the Contract Module, And we went ahead and launched that throughout the city. We trained everybody on it. We told everyone, let's try to identify every single contract that you know that you're currently using, getting it into the system, the paperwork and everything into the system. The way the contract module works, it works very well against expenditures. Once the contract number's in there, you put the ceiling amount in there, you can actually go in, pull that up on the contract module and see to date exactly how much has been spent on that contract. Before, we basically were blind. So that's been a huge improvement, and I can say that every division now has the ability to go in there and isolate their contracts. Obviously, there's still some contracts that we still need to identify, especially what you were talking about, the revenue contracts. Right now, the way they get run through, when you talk about business metrics, I should be able to say, how much money have we actually received from that vendor that owes us X amount of dollars? And unfortunately, right now, we can't actually pull a report. It has to come from several different sources. So we want to be more aggressive with our revenue management contracts. We have made tremendous improvements. I know that when you hear certain things coming up or something that's been missed, yes, definitely, those are things that we want to address and we want to go ahead and bring up to the forefront. But as a business owner or somebody who's launched a business, it seems contractual management and business 101 things seem very easy to us. You know, it's just part of our nature. We run things in a corporate sector manner. We know to look at the bottom line and how expenditures are run. That is not so much a thing that is learned in the public sector. And with that said, once you identify that, you have to go out and you have to train everybody. Every department manager, every single person that's in the organization needs to be trained on best business practices. We are public sector. We do an excellent job here in the city of the operations, delivering the operations, but we do need to tighten up the business side of the model. So with that said, my presentation is procurement best practices. I purposely labeled it that because people like to say here in the city, oh, well, procurement, you know, they need to do all of that. We're only talking about a few people. Are we talking about procurement best practices mean my staff? No. It should mean the entire city should understand and want to have those procurement best practices every day in everything that they do. So how do you do that? Unfortunately, in public sector, we have a rule book that we have to follow, and there's a reason for that. It's because we want to have open and fair competition for the public sector to be able to come in, or the private sector to come in and do business with us. So that's the reason why you have the rule book. But really, if everybody in your whole city understands and is integrated in the procurement functions, they themselves will want to participate in this. It's not so much that procurement is a rule maker, it's that they understand if we go ahead and understand all the best practices and we do better with our vendors, that obviously we're going to have the lowest prices available to us and we're going to have a good relationship with our local community. So with that said, we have identified that we really do need to have a very comprehensive training program throughout the city. And I have been developing that and we're getting ready to launch it. The first part of the program will be comprehensive EDEN training. That's our financial module that we use in the city. Backwards and forwards, everybody's gonna know how to run that contract module, how to run expenditure reports, how to understand, you know, what the POs are and actually what the bottom line dollar cost of that contract is. The second block is going to be heavy emphasis on contract management, procurement best practice, risk management, how to write good council reports. That's really critical for the council members. You should be able to have all the information that you need in that council report so that it's available to you. And briefly, a little bit on project management too. Third block is going to be how to identify and develop business analytic techniques. You can't possibly understand how to run your business if you don't know what that analytic is that you should be identifying, whether it be what's my revenue growth, what's my customer growth, how long it takes me to pay a bill. There's all sorts of metrics that you need to find out what's important in order to have a tight running ship. So I'm going to teach them how to do that, forecasting, benchmarking, cost analysis, and vendor performance management. We want people to make sure that whatever that contract says, all those performance measures, that our vendors are actually living up to that. So, can you see that screen that she has on
here?
Okay.
It's on your screen.
So now we're going to be talking about the competitive requirements and approval levels that we currently have. Our current policy is here on the left, and on the right is the proposed policy. One thing that I've identified is that we're losing money. When I say losing money, we're not doing the best job when it comes to quoting. Quoting has traditionally been left to the departments to do, and we don't have a vendor management system. So we literally don't have a database of our vendors that are available to us. That is a huge handicap to everybody in the city. That's part of this e-procurement that we're getting ready to launch, so that we can get as many vendors registered by commodity. So let's say we identify as many painters here in the city. The local, what can happen with e-procurement is the division that might need a painter, they can go in there and queue it by painting. And all the local vendors will come up, and they will be able to send those out electronically so that everybody can participate. So the local vendor community can really be embraced, and we can know all the people that we want to do business with. No more people falling through the cracks, or people that had offered their services and nobody even knew that they were available. I'm very, very excited about the vendor management. So the quoting, you can see with our current policy, the local divisions can quote between $2,500 and $35,000. And unfortunately, in the procurement policy, and this goes back to what I was saying about knowledge of good procurement best practices, it doesn't even say they can just do it on the phone. You know, just pick up the phone, and who knows what scope each vendor's told. So, you know, that's very sloppy, and we want to change that. Currently, right now, we don't even have a formal quote process for procurement to do. Any formal solicitations will be done over $35,000. So those are bidding, RFPs, letters of interest, anything that would have a value of $35,000 or more, we do that. And then right now, if the value is $100,000 or more, it is brought to council for approval before the expenditure is allowed. So no contract can be executed unless you say so over $100,000. The proposed policy is no quoting or bidding required, up to $5,000. I think that is appropriate, because once we get that vendor e-management system in, they'll go in there and they'll pull the vendors, and they'll know which ones they can call that are local, that is a good value for us. And then the quoting is required from $5,000 to $15,000. The divisions can do that on their own through the e-procurement system. And then we will do formal quotes from $15,000 to $50,000. Those are full-blown, I like to call them like mini bids. They're basically full-blown T&Cs. They have a set time that they have to come in, and they have to be posted by procurement. Formal solicitations over $50,000 and council approval over $100,000 for expenditures. All contracts of any sort will be placed on every agenda for you to see. The next page are the other entity thresholds. That's for your knowledge to see how we benchmark against what our current policies are and other various entities. And so then we come to decision points here. You know, would you like to proceed with the current contract approval levels that we have now? Of course, the considerations for that are the level of council oversight that you would like for the pre-approval to spend. And then, of course, potential efficiency decreases could be that staff time to draft the council agenda items, delay between council meetings, lengthy agendas, and potential business process delays by reducing that level.
Just going back a little bit to the $5,000 to $15,000 you're proposing with three bids. You mentioned before that could be done just by a phone, so there's no documentation of what the actual bid is from the vendor. Shouldn't that be written in some way so the person that's calling out
Absolutely.
For the bid is not showing some preference.
Yes, sir, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. But our current policy does not have that.
Yeah, but I don't see where that's in the new, is that in the proposed policy?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm sorry, everything has to be written.
Right.
Oh, yes, it's very well documented in the policy as to how it has to, all written and turned in documentation.
And for me, I think city council approval should be for everything at 50,000 and above instead of 100,000. Like, it only takes a few more minutes to read those two contracts off and bring it up in front of the public. But
I agree with that.
Yeah. Any idea how many that might be?
I have done a little bit of a look, and it's not, that will not,
it's not a major,
it will not be a big impact for 50 to 100.
Yeah, I think that would be important. And I mean, I like all the proposed changes, and I think what you're doing may be one of the most important things you've done in the city in a long time, to be honest with you.
Well, I appreciate that. It's a big initiative, but if everybody's on board and everybody wants to join the ship, it's all part of everything that Matt's been preaching to us for a couple of years now.
I mean, anytime there's something new, and there's you know, there's a little bit of a change, but once everyone understands all the rules and how we're playing, and it's going to make us much more efficient from top to bottom.
Thank you.
And everybody's playing by the same rules. I mean, it's not
right.
This contract over right. Here, this contract, it's all.
I think it's very important.
And I think, Tiffany, you've done a great job putting
absolutely.
All this together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've been working hard.
I know it.
So, Tiffany, I'll put you on the spot. When might the procurement policy be ready for council review and consideration?
I can have it on the next agenda. It's actually totally
it's
done.
It's in form. It's just a matter of
yes. I was just
in.
Waiting because I wanted to give you the opportunity to change the levels. And now that we know that direction, literally, I've got it done.
Okay.
So the second part of the presentation tonight is for me. And as part of the procurement department, this is what we want the procurement department to look like in the future. It doesn't look that way today. Tiffany's the procurement director. Currently, this is Mindy Stewart from the telecommunications department. She's working with Tiffany hand-in-hand to get the contracts under control. And as you know, Mel Poole and her are working hand side-by-side to accomplish this task with the telecommunications department. We do not have a procurement manager at this point. We have three buyers. We have four buyers. So I'm proposing to have a procurement manager so that Tiffany can divert her attention to procurement and to this business analyst and contract writing side. The end result of this would be to increase two positions to the city. The $142,000 that I put in the agenda, that's a full year's cost to the city. If we implement today some of these changes and do all the associated salary adjustments, it would cost us $35,000 from now until the end of the year, or we could just include it in the budget process for next year. So, or we could not do it at all. So I'm at your pleasure of what you'd like for me to do to continue moving this process forward.
If I may provide some context, in an effort to try to reduce cost to contend with the significant revenue loss that we sustained, we downsized significantly throughout the city, including procurement. In fact, Diane, could you talk briefly about what type of losses they had in staff through this?
I think they lost one buyer, but am I wrong, Tiffany? I'm sorry.
Is it one buyer?
Yeah, one buyer. We're down one buyer right now. The business analyst was to help relieve Tiffany of her, you know, she's a huge contract writer and a huge manager of everything, and so that was to help us to get the departments going. That's why that idea came. But the one buyer is to get us back to where we were.
Did that include those that are no longer here, like Jane Hurley and others that are no longer with the city?
Yes.
Okay.
In my perspective, we need to do everything we can to move this along and fund it so we can get it done.
Right.
Procurement is important, and the buying is important. You need to have a setup like this to make it work.
I mean, we can't, right now, citizen asks us a question. It's very difficult to get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a right to know that their money's being spent wisely.
Okay, we'll continue to move in this direction. It won't happen on Monday, but we'll get there.
We understand.
All right, thank you very much.
Monday afternoon.
Do you want Monday afternoon?
We'll have to come back to the budget amendment and look at that process, so.
Great work to yourself, Tiffany, and everyone that's involved with this process. Thank you.
Should we have a motion to approve this?
Do we need that back?
You want to bring an amendment back to do the budget, or do you want?
Do we need a motion here?
I probably don't need any money to accomplish it this year, so.
I think we just need to bring it back to council.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Let me go back to the top.
Yeah.
We have two more items on agenda tonight. President McLeod, this is your item.
Special contract audit.
Yes, sir.
This is something that I've asked for. Take a further look at telecommunications. I think we're going to get a little assistance from our external auditors and our internal auditors and look at see how things and practices have been done. We're also going to try to look at some things at electric and possibly at the how things are done in the warehouse and things of that nature. I think the extra money to do so, although we don't need to spend money every time we turn around, in this case, I think it's important to get a handle on things. And
you think spending this extra money is going to help us find some waste or something of that nature, or some maybe some better ways of doing things? Or?
Yeah, and I think we're, I have no doubt in my mind it will. It's all part of the process of what,
right.
what we're doing here. And again, we've made a lot of changes in the past couple of years, but this is just to add to the process. And considering what's happened at telecommunications and that mess we've just gone through, just piggybacks on top of that.
Right.
The majority of this is looking at that and just some different, looking at the warehousing and things of that nature. That's the idea behind this.
And this is to assist the...
It's up to, not to exceed $20,000.
Right.
Hopefully we can do as much of this internally.
Right. This is to assist our internal auditor, you think, or?
That's the money for the external.
Yeah.
And how much we need or use them would be dependent on whether we get to that amount of money. And we may be able to do a majority of it internally and mm-hmm. very little outside help.
Right.
But it's good to have multiple pair of eyes looking at it, I believe.
You don't think it's something that Gina can do?
Yes, absolutely. But I also
need an outside auditor.
I believe it's good to have multiple pair of eyes on this stuff. Have them looking at everything from contracts to practices and the way we've been doing things. Like I said, Jeannie can do the majority of the work, but again, I think an extra set of eyes is being important in this situation. It's my personal opinion. But I need your support if we're going to do it that way.
I like the idea. It takes money to make money.
Well, got to know where everything is, and it's not necessarily somebody's fault. It's just making us better at the end.
Are you the one that was sitting over there a minute ago talking about saving money and cutting back? Are you the same person?
How do you think this is going to work? I mean, it's like we're going to allow them not to exceed $20,000, but who's going to control when they come in? Is Jeannie going to be the person to say, hey, I need extra help?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
That was my.
It's not.
That was my understanding.
Yeah.
She may not use them.
Yeah.
We may not have to, but there may be situations where she needs to.
So just if she needs and sees that she needs extra help, then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the idea. And again, having that extra, they're here anyway.
Mm-hmm.
they're here and they have to be here. This is this little added scope of what they're doing.
Well, hopefully they can find and not be fraud or waste or whatever. Sometimes the practices that you get into become habitual and they never get approved. So now they can find some ways that can improve.
Yeah, I mean, if we can improve how we do
mm-hmm.
things,
yeah.
that's Mike and Larry focus on
mm-hmm.
you know, what's happening outside and what's our electrical, and, you know, we can be more efficient on one end, we can surely make it more efficient on the other, and get our PD linemen up to par where they need to be to, so they will keep going to other places.
John, exactly what are we looking for in this special contract audit?
Well, you know, just going to look at how the, well, we'll use telecommunications. We're going to look at how some of these contracts have been done in the past and where the authorization has come from, you know, how they were done. Obviously, you can see from the telecommunications issue that that was somewhat of a, I'm not sure how that whole thing came to be. And you know, we're involved with a company that was basically being sued by half the state of Florida, and so I just want to see how we're doing things and see if we can't get to the bottom of this. Is that a good enough answer? Probably not. You're looking at me like that's not a good enough answer.
No, that's what you want. That's what you want. I was just asking a question.
Yeah, that's the reason. At the end of the day, is to make us more efficient.
But I would hope nothing else comes up like...
I would really hope nothing else comes up. In a perfect world, nothing will come up.
If we've got all departments doing that, we are in bad shape, I should say.
And that's why the work that Tiffany and her staff will be doing by far is one of the most important things we've done in this city in a long time, I believe. Is everyone okay with that?
Yeah, I don't think it's unusual to have this happen, and if we need it, but I think we can do a lot of it right here.
We can.
Yeah. And it's just like Jay will tell you, the banks have audits all the time. They come in and tell them what they're doing wrong, right, Jay?
Every day.
Even when they're not doing anything wrong.
And then when I'm not doing anything wrong, they still want to tell me.
They pay them more money than that to tell them they're wrong. So it's just a good practice.
Yeah.
So do we need an actual motion for this, Mr. Gilligan?
Because it's authorized, I think you have to do it at council also.
Okay, this will be done at council. Well, we, I guess we have...
How does council want to pay for that? Through the reserves, general fund reserves? You want us to come up with a proposal for you to pay for that?
Come up with a proposal,
okay.
Maybe with a couple of options.
Okay.
I'm sure council would like to see more than one option.
Okay.
Where it's coming from.
Okay.
We may not have to.
Okay, we can move along. F, IRC general pension determination letter.
Let me go down and bring up the several pages of information on attached to your agenda tonight related to, as a result of our pension ordinance that we adopted, the General Employees Pension Board was requesting that we looked at the IRS compliance of it. And when I finished reviewing, I worked with a lady called Stearns Weaver Miller Westland. Her name is Sharon Dixon. And she came up with two areas that we do need to address. And one is called definitely determinable. Excuse me. Setting the assumptions is acceptable in the ordinance. We did that. But pointing to an actuarial assumption that changes, what the ordinance had done was it pointed to the actuarial valuation annually that changes. So like we did it 2012, next year we'll have 2013. And they said we needed to maintain the same actuarial valuation. So I'll show you in a moment where the revisions are coming. And then the second one was the minimum required distributions. The ordinance does not need to change right now, but the General Employees Pension Board was asking that we go ahead and change it now, simply because by the time the trigger needs to change and we need to do an amendment to the ordinance, some of us may not be here or be around, and nobody's going to remember this concept. So they wanted the trigger mechanism to be written into the ordinance so that we wouldn't have the problem of not being able to do that. And so I'll show you those in just a minute. But then the third one is in this paragraph right here. Because of these two recommended changes, and we're bringing an ordinance back to council, we would like to change the effective date for the retirees' pay to be moved. If you remember, the multiplier changes. It was 1.6 last year. It changed to 1.3 this year. I'll explain why in just a moment. So the retirees will be getting less money in their paychecks. Well, we found this out in February, March, and it was, according to the ordinance, it was supposed to change in April. Well, that didn't give us very much lead time to tell the retirees that their pension checks were going to be changing. So if number two happens and the multiplier goes from 1.3 and goes up to 1.8, then we have to do this pension ordinance change again as well. So what we needed to do is have time to allow that pension ordinance to be brought forward to council. So it was just a whole convoluted. So what we wanted to do was change it from April to October. That allows us plenty of time to notify the retirees your pension check is changing and satisfy the requirements of the IRS. So I know I've taken a very complicated issue. I've tried to pare it down to a brief discussion. If you'll let me go and show you for just a moment the ordinance changes. And I'll show you the, so simply this April date changes to October right there. That's one change. And then this little wording changes says that we can change the multiplier upon city council approval. And what that amendment to the system means is we bring an ordinance change to you as a first and second reading. And then the third one, this is stating that we will point to the 2012 evaluation from here forward until we do a five-year study, and then we'll do it again. We'll do an ordinance change that stated we did a five-year study, and now we're going to, instead of looking at the 2012, we're going to look at the 2017 or 18 or whatever actuarial. But we will have done a pension ordinance change in order for that to be brought forward to you. With that, that's all. The ordinance will be on the next council agenda. So I just wanted to have this time to discuss any other questions you all might have on that subject.
Let me put this in context, if I may, for just a moment. Recall when council approved the DBVH, defined benefit variable hybrid, redesigned to the general employees pension plan, you instituted a variable element to that, meaning that multiplier could change each year based upon the annual retirement contribution. For example, if the annual retirement contribution goes up out of the threshold, the multiplier is going to go down, and vice versa. The General Employees Pension Board and others wanted to get an IRS ruling to make sure that the new plan met all the IRS requirements. In essence, with these changes, it will. And so it answers that big question. I think it's a huge question to have answered. Diane, I have a question to you. The ordinance that will change the date from April to October, that is a one-time ordinance that's required to do that, right?
Yes, sir.
Annually, when that multiplier changes, would that have to be done annually, an ordinance be adopted to verify what that multiplier is?
The ordinance only has to be adopted if the multiplier goes up.
Oh, if it goes up. Okay.
Yes. So if we have a decrease in the multiplier, we do not have to bring an ordinance back to council.
And just as FYI, recall in that pension ordinance, council also wove into the ordinance the discount rate and three of the major assumptions. So from time to time, you may need to update those assumptions or the discount rate, and that would require, of course, an amendment to that ordinance.
So through lots of discussion and lots of, I think I'm satisfied with the results of the external attorney that worked on this project, and if you don't have any questions, we'll move forward and get it on your council agenda.
No questions. I still don't like the variable part of it, but no questions.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Believe me, I've spent a lot of time. I would like to take just a moment and let's talk about this letter here from Foster and Foster. This is the one that has to be done annually that triggers the pension checks changing or not changing. And this is our corridor evaluation. So what happens is they look at the projected defined benefits salaries. Then they looked at the defined contribution. Remember, we're paying 8% for people that are in the DC plan. So we have these total salaries. And when we came down to our evaluation this year, we were at 55.9%. In the ordinance, it said we had the maximum we could be at was 55%. So that's what triggered the multiplier change. So consequently, the Foster and Foster, who is our actuary, they said, okay, if you make it 1.3%, then you put, you run the salaries through the numbers again, and then you're back down to your 55%. So that's the goal of this variable hybrid plan. As you'll see and notice that you have an 88% for your defined benefit folks, but you have an 8% for your DC folks. But combined, the city is paying 55% for pension benefits today. And you know we have the corridor, and the corridor is supposed to come down over time. So next year we have a different ceiling, 54%. I can't remember if it's 54 or 53, but it's somewhere along there, so that over time we continue to bring that down. Because as people retire out of the defined benefit and retire, come into the DC plan, the amount should come down. So I just wanted to present that information to you as a two-page report, and we should get this report annually from Foster and Foster.
And I guess to summarize, recall the information that Jim Rizzo gave you. It was anticipated that for a certain number of years, the annual retirement contribution would continue to go up. And it would take a few years in order to bend that expenditure curve back down. And so this is performing just about as Jim anticipated to do. So it's provided to you tonight as an update to let you know that next year's rate's going to go down to 1.3 because the annual retirement contribution jumped up above the corridor. You're going to have to do, when the rate goes up, multiplier amendment to the ordinance. And of course, from time to time, do an amendment on the discount rate and maybe the assumption should they need to be updated from time to time.
Okay. Any questions for Diane or Mr. Brower? Okay. Any other matters?
No, that will complete our information.
All right. No further comments. We're adjourned.
It is. That's a tough one.
Nice.
It is.